The second day of the SEPTA strike is nearly complete, and there's no end in sight yet. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The Transit Authority and its largest union did not spend much of today at the negotiating table, and for the second day, buses, trolleys, and subways in Philadelphia did not budge. SEPTA handed a new proposal to the Transport Workers Union last night. The TWU has been discussing that proposal internally today. The two big issues, health care and pension benefits for transit workers, though the union also has concerns about schedules. Transit workers say their breaks between runs and the turnaround time between shifts are both too short. Protesting at SEPTA's Southern District facility today, Karen, a TWU bus operator who declined to give her full name, said drivers hardly get enough time to use the bathroom.
We out here 12 hours a day, and there's no restrooms on the routes that we have. So sometimes you can't make it to the end of the line to go to the bathroom, and you literally has to pull over and pray that one of the stores or locations will let us use the restroom without purchasing anything.
SEPTA management and the union are now finally meeting again at this hour. So what about the part of the SEPTA system that is still running? Well, last night, rush hour was a headache for those taking the regional rail home, complicated by the problem that pickets by the TWU kept some train crews from being able to get to work. To see how things are shaping up now, we turn to WHYY's Bobby Allen, who's just returned from Suburban Station.
Troy Anthony was sitting on a bench in Suburban Station in Center City, feeling frustrated. He came in from Northeast Philadelphia for a doctor's appointment, and now he's looking at this.
Got a whole concourse of people going through yellow chains, and it's like some of them don't know where the hell they're going. I hope they're in the right line. You know, it's like it's just ridiculous that people have to go through this.
Long lines snaking through the mezzanine, as well as delays, are not just irritating Anthony. Justina Stadanlik is stressed she won't get back to Jenkintown in time to pick up her kids from daycare. She has this message for the strikers.
Try to reach a resolution soon. And also, like, they've made their point. How about getting back behind the wheel and keep on negotiating? But don't make the whole city stop.
Transit workers, meanwhile, say they remain pretty far apart with SEPTA on pension, health care, and shift break demands. Kathy from media, who wouldn't give her last name, didn't have the most compassionate response to that.
How many times are they going to hold the customers hostage? All summer long, it was the trains were out of service because there was a problem. Now we got to stand here like cattle in line and no answers for almost an hour.
On the upside, Stadanlik from Jenkintown found something of a silver lining.
One thing positive I would say is the people who work for SEPTA who are here have been very helpful, have been very positive. The conductor that was on the train last night, just all smiles.
But for commuters, it remains a sea of frowns. And they say only a new contract can turn it upside down. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
While most workers have been fending for themselves, trying to get around Philly to and from work during the SEPTA strike, some hospitals in our area are giving their staff a helping hand. WHYY's Alana Gordon explains.
A lot of area hospitals have added special shuttles and more parking options. Mike Savigliano has been driving one of those vehicles around all morning.
It's been busy. A lot of Drexel and Penn employees and staff.
Still, it can be a strain. Over by the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, Katrina Smith was running late.
I waited for the van for an hour, and it was full, and it was the last one.
She was able to figure out another route to get to work. Terrence Swartz was on his way to see a niece who's been hospitalized, and he just decided to walk.
As long as I got 2 feet, I'm happy. Like, but overall, it's tiresome, but I had no other choice but to walk if I got to go to and from work and come visit my niece.
It took about 45 minutes. Mark Ross oversees the healthcare desk inside the city's Emergency Operations Center. It coordinates real-time communication between hospitals and kicks in during disruptions like this.
You know, for hospitals and healthcare, things are going actually pretty well. We've known this was a potential.
Ross likens this to prepping for a snowstorm. He says no major issues have been reported. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
One day after New Jersey officials rejected a plan for financial recovery in Atlantic City, city representatives say the state's reasoning is riddled with inaccuracies. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the city plans a quick response in hopes of averting a state takeover.
Rejection of Atlantic City's financial recovery plan has opened the door for a state takeover. Ed McManaman, one of the city's consultants, says it seems like that's what state officials wanted the review process to conclude.
The effort here wasn't to have this plan reviewed to see if it would work. It was to see what's wrong with it around the edges.
City officials and consultants held a press conference hours after the rejection to poke holes in the state's grounds for shooting down the plan. They said state officials relied on incorrect data and faulty logic to conclude the city's plan for layoffs, spending cuts, and selling city land wouldn't work. A spokesman for the State Department of Community Affairs said any suggestion that the rejection was inaccurate or motivated by politics is untrue. City Council President Marty Small says what's worse is the state didn't offer an alternative.
No mistake about it. The state has never had a plan, never will have a plan, and in their 75 pages of nonsense, they didn't offer a plan.
This all comes after months of back and forth between state officials who support a takeover and Atlantic City officials who want to maintain local control. The city is trying to close a $100 million budget hole and pay off $500 million in debt. Republican Mayor Don Guardian says he hopes to correct some of the errors he and others say the rejection contains. If state officials don't change their minds, though, Guardian says the next step is to fight this in court.
We have three branches of government, and the judicial has always been there to come in to help the people of Atlantic City. And so the next step is going to be taking it to the court.
From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says that those who cast an early vote for Hillary Clinton, that if they've changed their minds, they can change their vote. WHYY's Dave Davies looks at the rules about that in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania doesn't have early voting like some states, but more than 300,000 people have applied for absentee ballots, and many have already submitted them. A Trump staffer tweeted that you can change your absentee vote by calling a toll-free number. Not true. In Pennsylvania, you're entitled to vote as an absentee if you can't get to your polling place on Election Day. Deputy Secretary of State Marion Schneider says this close to the election, there's only one way for absentee voters to change course.
They can go to their polling place and void their absentee ballot and then vote normally in the polling place on Election Day.
Schneider says poll workers should easily flag the voter as someone who submitted an absentee ballot, so it will not be opened or counted. But she advises any voter in that circumstance to let poll workers know. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Still ahead this evening, we'll take a look at the battle in Pennsylvania to replace former Attorney General Kathleen Kane.
I believe that he has higher aspirations. The Office of Attorney General should not be a rental space, should not be a stepping stone.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. On Tuesday, Bucks County voters will determine the outcome of Pennsylvania's only competitive congressional contest. In our second of two conversations on the race, WHYY Philadelphia suburban reporter Laura Benchoff is here to focus on Democratic candidate Steve Santacero and how outside groups have poured millions of dollars into last-minute TV ads. Laura, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, start us off with a refresher.
So when we left off yesterday, we'd gotten into a little bit about Republican candidate Brian Fitzpatrick, and he's a former FBI agent with no prior experience in elected office. He's also the brother of the incumbent Mike Fitzpatrick. Today we're looking at the Democrat, though. That's Steve Santacero, and he's a state rep from the Yardley Newtown area. He's been in that post for about 8 years. Before that, he was a lawyer and a high school teacher, and he likes to trace his path to public service to a pivotal point in American history.
After September 11th, I decided to switch careers. I gave up my legal career and ultimately wound up teaching social studies at Bensalem High School. And it was, for me, one of the greatest career moves in my life.
So he considers his time as a public school teacher, public service. And then after that, he ran for a sort of very local position in Lower Makefield on the town Township Board of Supervisors. And he initially got into office because he opposed a development in the area, a big cluster of box stores.
So as that career path has taken him to Harrisburg, what can we focus on there?
Well, you know, to listen to his opponents, they say he really hasn't done enough.
His campaign brags about his accomplishments, but in fact, he has failed in 54 attempts to get any legislation on the books.
So that's alluding to a mailer that went out during the primary where he was taking some credit for bills he'd co-sponsored, but the wording was a little bit confusing. And it looked like he had authored 54 pieces of legislation that had in fact passed. And his campaign manager kind of had to do some damage control on that. You know, as a Democrat, he's been in the House Minority Party for 3/4 of his time in Harrisburg. And he says that's the reason why he doesn't have any sort of big signature legislation he can point to. But he has worked to amend some bills with a chance of passing. And he likes to point out work he's done advocating for his district sort of outside the Capitol.
When New Jersey passed the residency requirement for its public employees, you know, I put myself in the middle of that and I worked hard to make sure that there were protections in place for the people who currently have those jobs.
So he basically worked with the New Jersey government to make sure there was a grandfather clause. So all of these thousands of New Jersey state employees who live in Bucks County wouldn't have to choose between moving or giving up their jobs.
As this is a high-profile race, now let's follow the money.
Yes, there's a lot of money being poured into this race. You know, both parties are really paying attention to down ticket now. It's sort of, as the presidential race is, you know, people are getting tired of it. They're spending a lot of money to try to win seats in the Senate and Congress. Campaign finance watchdog group Open Secrets has this race in the top 10 most expensive congressional races in the country. That's because it's very competitive. And that includes a lot of spending sort of by the national parties and outside interest groups who are trying to get their candidates elected. So speaking of that outside money, national parties and their PACs are spending a lot in the last couple of weeks, just this week and next week. Combined, they're spending more than $5 million on TV ads in our region. So I talked to Franklin Marshall, political science professor, and pollster Terry Madonna to sort of see what that meant. And he says those ads might not be as big a factor as who is doing better in the presidential race.
Trump is losing the Philadelphia burbs in some polls by 20-some points.
So if Trump is down, that means Hillary is up, and that gives a boost to San Ysidro. Although I don't think Madonna's most recent polls include any of the fallout from the most recent release on Hillary Clinton's emails. And as for polling at the congressional level, both sides say that it's very, very close a couple of weeks out from the election.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you so much, Dave.
WHYY suburban reporter Laura Benshoff. And our conversation on Republican candidate Brian Fitzpatrick aired yesterday. You can check it out online at newsworks.org/decision2016. A single day last month highlighted both the past troubles and future hopes of Pennsylvania's Attorney General's office. At the very moment former Attorney General Kathleen King was awaiting sentencing for her federal perjury conviction, the two men vying to replace her were taking part in debate. For Kane, it was the final chapter in a legal battle that roiled the AG's office for several years. WHYY's Katie Meyer reports that while the tumultuous Kane years may be over, they become a defining feature of next Tuesday's election.
On a fall morning at Widener University in Harrisburg, Democrat Josh Shapiro and Republican John Rafferty are trying to make the case for why they should be elected as the Commonwealth's new Attorney General. Both tout their experience, integrity, and commitment to the office. Both list plans for their tenure. Shapiro wants to hire a diversity officer, for instance. Rafferty advocates creating more specialized units, like one for animal abuse. And again, both return to a now familiar refrain. I'm not like Kathleen Kane.
We will not tolerate the type of behavior that existed in that office under someone with only a little more experience than my opponent, who has even less experience than her.
I'm the only candidate sitting up here with the executive experience who knows how to clean up a mess and make that office work again.
I am running against Kathleen Kane in a suit.
It's now been several months since Kane's resignation, but she's still casting a long shadow on the race and on the office she left in disarray. The main headquarters for the Office of the Attorney General is in downtown Harrisburg on the upper floors of the Strawberry Square complex that houses many state workers. Inside, there's a glass wall and door that separates the executive suite from the rest of the AG employees. Chuck Ardo served as the office's press secretary under Kane and now under interim AG Bruce Beamer. He says during the final months of Kane's administration, that door became a symbol of all that was going wrong in the office.
It requires a swipe card to get in. Not only was it locked, but they were in the process of limiting the number of swipe cards that would actually open that door.
Kane wasn't accessible, according to Ardo, who was her eighth press secretary when he joined her administration in 2015. He says the lack of communication, coupled with interoffice tensions and never-ending investigations into Kane's affairs, took their toll on morale.
I left in May of 2016. The attorney general had inexplicably decided not to talk to me. And it's very difficult to be a spokesman for someone who doesn't speak.
But he says things are different now. Since the appointment of Beamer, who had been the state inspector general before taking over as AG, confidence in the office is up. Ardo is back as press secretary, and the executive suite is unlocked.
I think if you were to go out there now and yank the door, you would see that it is open and accessible.
But still, he says the upcoming election is a big one for the Commonwealth, but also for the long-suffering AG employees. First Deputy Attorney General Robert Mulley served as Executive Deputy Attorney General in the Civil Law Division under Kane. He was appointed to his current spot by Beamer. He says it's been a long road to get here.
Is there apprehension? There always is in a transition. There have been a lot, and that has, I'm sure, worn a little bit on people, but they've seen a positive outcome at the end of the road.
That positive outcome Mulley's referring to is the current man in charge, Beamer. Mulley and Ardo concur. The interim AG is highly respected around the office. Mulley says in a lot of ways, November 8th will be bittersweet.
It would be less than candid if I didn't say that I think some people are disappointed that he's only going to be here for 4 months.
But regardless of any strides the office has made in the past months, Rafferty and Shapiro's campaign messaging still hinges on the idea of starting fresh and on the knowledge that Pennsylvanians remain wary of a Kane repeat. On paper, neither one is particularly similar to Kane, who was an assistant district attorney for Lackawanna County but had never held elected office before becoming the state's top law enforcement official. Rafferty has been a state senator since 2003 and chairs the Senate Transportation Committee. He's also worked as a prosecutor and was a deputy attorney general in the late 1980s and early 90s. The younger Shapiro served as a state representative from 2004 to 2012, when he became a Montgomery County commissioner. He also works with the Philadelphia law firm. But the two have consistently found ways to attack each other's records, with Shapiro criticizing Rafferty's sympathies to GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump.
John is captive to the special interests within his party. He is stuck on the ticket with Donald Trump and is trying to benefit from the fear-mongering that Donald Trump is doing throughout parts of Pennsylvania.
And Rafferty accusing Shapiro of running for AG as a calculated political move.
I believe that he has higher aspirations. The Office of Attorney General should not be a rental space, should not be a stepping stone.
In terms of politics, they do differ. Shapiro is pro-stricter gun laws, supports abortion rights, and has won endorsements from the likes of Democratic Governor Tom Wolf, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, and groups like Planned Parenthood. Rafferty is backed by the Pennsylvania State Troopers Association, as well as the National Rifle Association, among others. He has opposed gun background check bills and also has support from anti-abortion groups. Despite the differences, Ardo says at the end of the day, he's sure either one will do a fine job.
I don't think anybody here expects a repeat of Kathleen Kane's administration any time in the near or distant future. I think Kathleen Kane routinely listened to the wrong people. I don't think that's likely to happen again for an extended period of time.
The AG's office, he says, really just needs someone who will follow the rules and keep that executive suite unlocked. Katie Meyer in Harrisburg.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. In her campaign for the U.S. Senate, Katie McGinty is casting herself as a more mainstream alternative to the incumbent Pat Toomey. Tomorrow evening, we'll take a closer look at that pivotal race. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Drexel University.